DW Africa Link.
Wars and conflicts continue to displace people, and it is crucial that we don't overlook the issue. Today, let's discuss refugees and displaced persons in Malawi. Dzaleka Refugee Camp in Malawi was built for 10,000. It now holds over 50,000. And with UNHCR cutting funding, slashing staff, and warning of possible closure, the camp faces a deepening humanitarian crisis. Services are vanishing: food aid, healthcare, and education, while thousands are left in limbo with no clear path forward. Officials cite global funding shortfalls, but the silence around Dzaleka raises urgent questions. What happens when the world stops watching? And who protects refugees when the system built to shelter them begins to disappear? In this episode, we examine the unraveling of Dzaleka and what it signals for the future of refugee protection in Southern Africa. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Malawi's biggest refugee camp, Dzaleka Refugee Camp, which keeps refugees and asylum seekers, faces a bleak future. The camp is in a crisis as the UNHCR is cutting jobs and funding ahead of a possible closure. If the closure happens, it will not only displace thousands of refugees, but also disrupt crucial services such as health services, food deliveries, and trauma support. The UN body is already selling off its vehicles, equipment, and other assets, leaving questions about who will support the operations of the refugee camp, with the UNHCR leaving behind just a small team to operate. Dzaleka Refugee Camp houses approximately 56,000 refugees rather than the originally planned 10,000 to 12,000 people. The camp is overcrowded, with refugees fleeing from conflicts in countries such as Rwanda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Ethiopia, and others. Now, joining me for the discussion is DW's George Mango in Blantyre and Jesse Chingoma, gender and labor activist. Thank you so much for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast. Let me start with you, George, as our correspondent and our eyes and ears on the ground. Tell us more about these refugees to be affected.
So basically, we're talking about refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Ethiopia, Burundi, and Eritrea. We're talking about 56,000 of them who are accommodated at this camp. And of course, since the inception of this camp was supposed to be hosting about 10 to 12,000 of them. But you can look at the figure itself. It's very worrisome. And of course, other refugees are still plying their trade outside this camp against the laws of Malawi. So that's what currently I can say in terms of those who are going to be affected. But these are the people that are at the camp right now.
Jesse, you are also a gender activist. When you heard of the news of possible closure of the camp, what came to mind?
Immediately, I think it's very disturbing, especially you look at these issues where women are actually disadvantaged, and you look at the services that are supposed to be providing that fulfills human rights and also issues of gender. You're looking at healthcare services, for example, and also the fact that there are job cuts. It means now that the basic public services are actually not adequate. They are already been inadequate, but now the position becomes even much, much worse with the funding cuts that are actually happening there. So it is a concern as a human labor activist, as well as a gender activist, especially that women will be more disadvantaged, worse actually, when you compare with the situation that was there.
Let's talk about the disadvantages more, JC. What is it that young girls and women face at the camp you wish to be addressed?
We are looking at access to healthcare services, for example. access to maternity, access to services that we would need. You know, as females, we need more healthcare services than males, especially because of the biological processes we are undergo. So that is actually a frustration. We are also looking at prevention of diseases. They could be waterborne. It could be anything. And Malawi is a country where we have a lot of mosquitoes. We also have a lot of malaria amongst us. And this is a frustration where you don't have proper care that is needed, especially as a human right for all, where more women are actually very vulnerable. You are looking at access to maternity care, delivery of babies, care of babies, sexual reproductive health services, including information that will actually not be there because there are job cuts, people that are supposed to do that. And also we have the funding cuts that is there that actually affects the healthcare systems negatively.
And George, just to come back to you to tell us also the take of UNHCR, the primary provider of support and protection for refugees on these developments.
Yeah, so in terms of the UNHCR, I've been in touch with them, talked to them on this development. They are saying that they are also incapacitated in one way or the other because previously they've sounded an SOS for international donor support or even the Malawi government to zero in with adequate funding towards food supplies and, of course, the issue of healthcare provision and even an extension of the camp itself because it's highly congested. And the fact that they are selling vehicles, they are cutting jobs, even food is a challenge for them to provide to the to the refugees there. That's their complaint because there is no other entity that is willing to provide food. World Food Program has been there, but you know, in 2024, it did cut its food rations. It also cut some allowances that these refugees were getting per month to $6 per month. So you can imagine how can a refugee who is residing there survive on $6 per month? We're talking about them buying food, clothes, getting medical care. So it's an issue that UNHCR officials are complaining about. They have also said that the fact that they are reducing members of staff in terms of security personnel and those that work in different capacities as maybe in health circles, educational circles, it's a challenge because they cannot even understand as to why other entities are not zeroing in on this one. So it's a sign for them that indeed at one point in time, they are indeed going to back off from provision of different basic needs at the camp, as evidenced by the withdrawal of some vehicles or sales of vehicles, cutting of some staff members. So that definitely leaves everything in the hands of the Malawi government to look at who is going to still be there, despite other issues that have been there in terms of maybe voluntary repatriation of refugees, which has proven to be a tough thing for refugees who are there to acknowledge and accept.
Right. Still with you, George. You know, the scaling down of jobs and funding by the UNHCR is a significant blow, even just listening to you and Jesse. Obviously, closing that camp will lead to closure of also crucial services and the displacement of thousands of refugees. What happens to them after?
What is going to happen to them afterwards? Definitely, it's the Malawi government that has to bear the challenge of knowing what to do, because as of last year, the authorities indicated that they're going to relocate the refugees to somewhere close to Tanzania. That's Chitipa district in Malawi, along the borders with Tanzania, so that at least maybe they reduce the influx of refugees and asylum seekers coming to Malawi. And the government also indicated that that could be maybe one way of preventing these refugees from war-torn countries in the eastern part of Africa to coming to Malawi. And secondly, the other issue is definitely what it means is that these refugees will continue flooding rural and towns, basically in Lilongwe, Blantyre, and Mzuzu. so that at least they have something to eat at the end of the day, where they can also sleep, where they can also ensure that their children are, you know, given the much needed education. Because you walk into Lilongwe, you walk into Blantyre and Mzuzu, you find some of the refugees who have been defiant of government's call to go back to the camp, plying trade, various businesses, something that still more poses a challenge on the Malawian public. And of course, it's something that government has to debate critically well if it comes to budgetary allocation towards issues of security, issues of those people that have, you know, that are coming into Malawi, bearing in mind the fact that Malawi plays a host to different refugees. Recently, it was an issue of refugees from Mozambique because of the 2024 pause, you see. So it remains a challenge. But at the moment, there is no clear answer as to what is going to happen to them should UNHCR indeed close the camp itself.
Now, Jesse, just to come back to you, I know you've mentioned some of the challenges young girls and women at the camp face, more of health, but we are also looking at myriad of challenges, including gender-based violence, lack of access to education, and limited opportunities for economic empowerment, just to name but a few. These issues need urgent attention to ensure the safety and well-being of the vulnerable groups. What should be done? And do you think the UNHCR is justified to scale down jobs and funding?
It's not justified, especially that we have a very long list of challenges, and gender-based violence is one of the challenges that we have. Access to food, access to education, basic education, for example, and also the issues of congestion that are there, the issues of economic empowerment, how do people survive? Because you have all already heard that the stipends that are given are not enough actually for someone to survive. Already, if we talk about that, we talk about all these problems, women and girls are at a very big disadvantage. So they are not justified. For me, I think the scaling down should have been done in such a way that the essential services actually remain to support the people that are there.
Right. And let's talk about the food also, that situation. How do refugees really cope with the food? That also even George mentioned that WF and UNHCR provide monthly. What will happen now, Jesse?
It's even worse. We don't know. Actually, we are very confused to say how will these people survive. For me, I think essential things like food, water, health services, ensure that there are less cases of violence there. These are the critical, basic human rights issues, issues that actually should actually be left so that people survive and not the case as it is now.
George, do you want to add something on that, especially if you've been doing this report, how refugees will cope now with the food situation? Have you heard anything from the government, any other non-governmental organizations, or even just the private sector?
Yes. So what is known in the public circles within the confines of the Malawi government is that recently they got about $91 million from World Bank, so that at least they buy food using World Food Program. And this food or maize is supposed to be bought from Tanzania. And a chunk of them arrived, that was 3 months ago. It's meant to cater for those under the hunger suffrage, who are Malawians, inclusive the refugees themselves. So that was the condition that World Bank indicated when they were channeling this $91 million towards food procurement or maize procurement from Tanzania. We also understand that about 4.5 million Malawians are also in dire need. So it means that this is going to be split into two. One has to care for the refugees at the camp, and the other chunk to care for Malawians that are in dire need of support. If it comes to the private sector role as to what they are doing, donations have been there, even building some maybe clinics around the area so that the refugees at least, you know, get the much needed health care provision. Or others have also gone there to donate books. for educational purposes. That is happening, but it's on a minimal level. And the other way, which has maybe the members of the religious, you know, groupings have also gone there to make some donations. But what is very worrying is the number of refugees keeps on skyrocketing. As I indicated, that about 10 to 12,000 were the ones bona fide to stay in the camp. But now we're talking about 56,000 of them still being accommodated there. Food will not be enough. Even these other basic amenities are not even enough at the moment. But that is what I can say government is trying to do in collaboration with maybe the international partners. Of course, the private sector, the other, you know, religious groupings do their own stuff, like maybe making some donations, but they are not enough. And that is why some of the refugees at the camp have also ventured into farming. They're able to grow their own crops outside the camp so that they sustain their livelihoods, something that to some extent leaves quite a number of questions in the eyes of the eyes of the communities around there, because we've heard of news stories of some some conflicts between local Malawians and then the refugees, because local Malawians are saying, why are you farming? You're not supposed to farm. Why are you doing business? You're not supposed to do business because you're supposed to be staying right in the camp. So those are the issues if it comes to this, their survival and maybe possibly what themselves, the refugees, do for survival.
Right. Now, Jesse, what should be done really to ensure that the rights of these refugees are not violated?
I think a number of players need to come in. We have already seen or heard the government efforts, but the UN also should not actually abandon the whole situation. I think they still need to sustain, especially the basic needs that people need to survive, including the construction of health facilities around the areas that are involved.
And is the budgetary support from the government enough?
It's not enough. It has never been enough. It's not enough. I think we also needed to lobby for the private sector also to come in, and also other partners that can come in to hold hands with the government to ensure we support the human life.
Let's talk about the portion that the government is supporting. What are the percentages like, and what exactly are they supporting?
We know about the food. We know about the access to health, but all of them are not adequate. Are not adequate if we look at the figures and the numbers, and also the numbers that are there in the camps. I think there's need for more support for these vulnerable people.
Right. Now, George, Malawi revived operations to have refugees living outside the camp. How did this go?
In the first case, when it was introduced by Minister of Homeland, then Kenzi Kalingoma, it was well applauded by different sectors to say it's indeed important for these refugees to go back into the camp, because that's where they belong according to security laws in the country and some other charters within the confines of the UNHCR. So it happened in a way that some human rights activists, commentators or campaigners, you know, started blaming government to say it's a violation of rights of these refugees or asylum seekers. Because at the camp there, there are no enough facilities. So why should the Malawi authorities, you know, force them to go back into the camp or stay there, when in actual sense, not all the basic amenities are being provided? At the same time, the way the authorities, you know, embarked on this progress or this relocation progress was not in good faith, because at the same time, we also heard that some of the refugees were being beaten up, which was confirmed, of course, and their goods were being confiscated. And at the same time, their money were being confiscated by the police. So all those things, you put them together, it was not, it did not go on well. So it's a challenge that left the authorities to say, I think we need to go back again to a drawing board, because even the United Nations Human Rights UNHCR zeroed in to say the way Malawi introduced the subject to the matter to ensure that these refugees go back into camp, those who are applying their businesses outside it, was not good. So government backed out and they said, okay, fine, they're going to look at other avenues. And that is why they zeroed in with the voluntary repatriation. Yes. Mm.
And has their return aggravated the provision of basic needs to the refugees, George?
Exactly. It has aggravated the situation. Why? Because we're talking about the figures that are at the camp at the moment, and food supplies, water issues, health care provision remains a challenge, because people at the camp are battling for meager resources that do not even add up with the figures at the camp. And at the same time, we're also talking about other international organizations backing out to say they cannot even afford to provide food to those people living in the camp. Just as I indicated, World Food Program has been complaining year in, year out about lack of funding so that they continue supporting those people that are at the camp there. So you can imagine it's a challenge that definitely leaves a lot to be desired and has to be looked into pretty well if it means maybe continuing supporting or providing food. Suffice to say that funding from the government side through the Minister of Homeland Security has not even been enough, as it was indicated by Jesse here. So it's a challenge. And looking forward, I think maybe it's an issue of ensuring that government zeroes in more. Of course, the budget, which was passed, the 2025-2026 budget, is also very minimal, because we look at the Homeland Security Ministry having gotten a little, which cannot even be able to support those refugees, because the ministry has its own, you know, affairs to deal with, maybe payment of salaries to immigration authorities, police officers, prison warders, and even those people that man the country's borders. So it's a challenge, but it has aggravated the situation, yes.
Mm. And as we wrap up our discussion, any progress with the voluntary repatriation of refugees to their respective countries?
There has been progress, but for this year, it hasn't been much of a talk. Why? Because the last time that we did hear of the voluntary repatriation was last year when those people, more especially from Burundi, volunteered themselves. The numbers do add up to 150. They are the people that volunteer to be repatriated. And what is happening here is that those that wish to be repatriated voluntarily, they, you know, register with the UNHCR and the Ministry of Homeland and Security to say, we feel like going back home. And of course, they also discuss with their respective countries, more especially Burundi, said that they are going to be given 3 months allowances once they arrive in Bujumbura. Others from Rwanda, once they arrive there, some allowances would be provided. But this year around, we haven't heard much about the voluntary repatriation. But as of last year, it was indeed something that Malawi was praised for, such that the UN also granted Malawi a token of appreciation through an award to say, you have managed it well with the voluntary repatriation of refugees, more especially those where their country is no longer at war or no longer in conflict. So it went well, but we are yet to see whether this is going to continue with change of ministers in the Ministry of Homeland and Security.
All right. Thank you so much, George Mango, our DW correspondent in Blantyre, and Jesse Chingoma, gender and labor activist. Thank you so much for joining us today. Ultimately, one can only hope that the refugees in Malawi will receive the protection they deserve across Africa. Dozens of people have been displaced for various reasons. Until now, it is hard to find a country that doesn't have its people living outside for various reasons. It is not only war or conflict, but also political persecution. Will there ever be a time when people can live peacefully in their countries without fear of persecution? Only time will tell. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community. Your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions and contribute to finding solutions to the refugee crisis. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Together, we can make a difference. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for mind.